All right, let's get introductions. My name is Jeff Termasezen. I've been presenting here for about 5 years now. I have a bachelor's in political science, a master's in cybersecurity. I'm very interested in computers and law and everything that goes along with it. And drones are lots of fun, and they have good things and they've got bad things.
Yeah, my name is Christina, and I am a criminal defense attorney. And so obviously I have an interest in how the government is monitoring what it is that we're doing.
All right. Speak up or...
I can repeat. Do you need me to repeat? Okay, great.
All right, so how many of you have played with drones before? How many of you drones? Any sort of a drone? All right. How many of you have actually looked around to consider what could be considered a drone? Okay, so a couple more. All right, how many of you think drones are just those really wicked-looking aircraft the Air Force flies around? Okay, that's good. That's good. I started photography about a year and a half ago. And I actually wanted to do it this kind of, but unfortunately it didn't work out quite like I had hoped. I had one of those zombie shark, those air swimmers, that you like fly around conventions and whatnot. They look like a big shark that literally swims through the air. And I wanted to mount a little GoPro camera. I don't know if you've seen those. They're like little high impact sports cameras. I wanted to attach to one of those, but unfortunately I couldn't get my weights quite right. I couldn't get enough helium into the thing to lift it. So I have to see if I can get a lighter balloon. But I have seen them floating around here before. And I really, really, really wanted to get that up, partly for this panel. Because there are so many things floating around that we don't really think of as drones, or we don't think, ooh, that could be a threat, because it just looks innocuous. It doesn't look military. It doesn't look scary. It doesn't look anything. It looks like fun. But it's dead easy to stick a camera onto it and go around recording. And honestly, if you saw a shark swimming around here, everyone who saw the shark itself was like, oh my God, they're so cool. But there's really no difference between my flying it around and law enforcement flying it around, recording everyone here, you know, not for any particular reason other than if something happens, well, we've got footage and we'll see if whatever happened was caught on camera. And the reason I got the shark was it was like $30. It was like $30 for this really, really nifty little thing that can float around. I saw another more fun, but a lot more expensive, drone helicopter. It's one of those quadcopters. And it was, but it was like $600. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to go for the $30 option. And, but it's designed for flying a camera around. And for the most part, most of us enthusiasts, and, you know, we like things that fly around. And, I have seen plans, I haven't done this one myself yet, but you can attach almost anything to those copters these days. I've seen, I think it was Tech down here, or MIT did a thing where they actually surveilled a whole neighborhood using one of those copters, and basically they were doing war driving. And how many of you know what war driving is? All right, most of you. Basically, it's flying around just looking for open Wi-Fi signals and keeping a record of what kind of signal it is. Is something broadcasting? Is it encrypted? If so, what kind of encryption? And it sort of keeps a map of everything that it finds and where it finds it. And it's dead easy to sit in like an apartment complex, and those things usually have a couple hundred foot radius or your range, and sit in your apartment, fly it around, map out all of your neighbors out to a couple hundred feet, and you know, bring it back in, download the data, and you've got a pretty good map of everything that, of everything that's going around. And if you attach a camera to that, you've now got, you know, images of at least the outside of the buildings as to who's got Wi-Fi where, and you've now got footage of who's going in there as well. And most people, when they look up and see a drone, they're not thinking, oh my God, they could be spying me. They're thinking, holy crap, that's cool. Where do I get one? So drones have evolved quite a bit from the huge military interceptor type things that everyone goes like, oh my God, okay, you know, that's a military drone, to, hey, that's something that could very easily be spying on me, or, you know, making note of what my Wi-Fi is and keeping track of things like that. And we ran into a lot of legal issues there because, for the most part, it's not illegal to fly those around. No, as long as you con as long as you follow certain conventions, like you can't go over a certain altitude, you can't be a commercial entity doing video recording with it. So you have to, if you're a private citizen and whatnot, just flying it around, you can be an enthusiast. It's like taking out the RC planes and flying them through around a field, you know. And frankly, if you're fast enough about it, even if it was illegal, you and unless you happen to get bad luck and fly it over a cop, you know, you can fly it around and bring it back before anyone ever knew it was there, especially if you're flying at night. So, it's very easy these days to go online, pick up something for $1,000 where you can do your own surveillance, own drone surveillance on your neighbors, yourself, if you know, if you're psychotic, your boyfriend, your girlfriend. Surveillance these, especially drone surveillance these days, has really become something that anybody could do anytime. And like I said, the little GoPro camera, it's like a 2.3 ounce camera that's like pretty much the size of a matchbox. And it's got better than high def, better than 1080 video on that thing, and it does both regular and wide angle cam. So I can take that little thing and pretty much record anything anywhere at better than high definition. And I don't know if you've run across anything with drones working as a lawyer yet.
No, I haven't had any, of course, any cases, but I have read a lot where we normally, like you were mentioning earlier, we normally think of drones as things that the military or the CIA or, you know, the federal government uses overseas in order to spy on and take out terrorists, or use that to monitor the large parts of the border between the US and Mexico that don't have or that are prone to being areas where people are crossing. That's normally what we think of, and I think that most people are fairly, well, I'm not necessarily comfortable with drones all the time in those kinds of situations, but certainly people feel, my feeling is that people are more comfortable with them in those situations than they are with like drones flying around in their suburban neighborhoods. But what's happening is that an increasing number of local governments, local law enforcement are using drones as one, as part of their regular investigations, but also just as general surveillance, just or they're heading that way, and there are a number of local law enforcement, not here in Georgia that I'm aware of, but that have purchased or have plans in place to buy and use them, and they're pushing the FAA so that there are fewer barriers to the use of them, because there are limitations, but you know, to fly the big drones and to fly them the way that somebody would need to in order to monitor an entire, you know, metro area, the FAA would probably need to get involved, and so they're pushing them to have to lessen or change their regulations so that it's possible for them to fly drones for just general surveillance. So I don't know if, I don't even know if there's any court cases specifically about drones, but there are a number of court cases that have dealt with aerial surveillance or placing of GPS trackers on cars or just monitoring people as they're going about their daily lives, you know, traveling on public roads and things like that. And for the most part, once you're outside of your house and you're wandering around, you don't really have a reasonable expectation of privacy, which, you know, if it's perfectly legal for the police to follow you in their car as you're walking down the street or driving around in your car, without any sort of a warrant or whatever, because you are in public. And that's, anyone can see you at any time. There's no need for them to get a warrant for a situation like that. But there are limitations, and it is a Fourth Amendment violation if they use things. They're not available to the public. There was a case where they had used thermal sensing cameras in order to figure out that somebody had a greenhouse full of growing, they were growing marijuana in there. And the reason why that required a warrant is because the average citizen wouldn't have been able to purchase that type of technology. So it wasn't something that just any person would have been able to observe. And so that's why I think that the things that you were talking about with how readily available they are, how cheap they are, and how they're just available to any person, certainly no limitations in selling them to a regular citizen. There may be some financial barriers, but
right.
It's not like buying a rocket launcher where I need to somehow prove that I'm either have a license or, you know, I'm the military. Anybody can go and buy any of the things that you were talking about and do their own surveillance. And so that would definitely be something, well, if an average citizen can do it, then cops can do it.
What is considered the bar on readily available? Because the cameras you're talking about are called FLIR cameras, FLIR, mm-hmm. forward-looking infrared, and you can buy those online these days. But again, you've got a financial barrier there more so than a access barrier. At what point, like you mentioned, that you got to get a warrant for that? How readily available does it need to be before the cops can go, all right, we don't need a warrant anymore because you can buy these mm-hmm. things on Amazon now?
Well, it would certainly, on one side of the line, would be things where the manufacturers are just prohibited from selling that to civilians. And I think that that line gets a little bit blurrier where if I have enough money, I can buy it, but you're talking tens of thousands of dollars. I don't think the average person's going to have, you know, say, you know, infrared goggles. So that might be something that would say, okay, the average citizen isn't going to either be able to afford that, or they're not going to get sold that. But something like this, you know, I mean, maybe I don't have a couple grand laying around in my bank account to buy it, but, you know, I don't think it's out of the reach of most people to, you know, save
right.
their pennies and buy it, you know. I think it's got to be really expensive before cost alone would put that into the realm of that's law enforcement only.
Well, the fact that you quoted one case where they were turned mm-hmm. over because of using infrared, but they mm-hmm. use that all over the country to convict people every day.
Well, so I mean,
one case.
if they have a warrant, then by all means, they can do that. And there's a difference between I would say using infrared to, say, find somebody who's a fugitive running through a park in, you know, the middle of the night and they're trying to find them. But, you know, that particular case, they were aiming this at a person's house, and it was their private property, and that was where they wound up. Because they couldn't have walked into that house without a warrant, but they could certainly wander around a public park without a warrant.
Mm-hmm. If it had been from a police helicopter instead of from a drone, I mean, police use infrared cameras for that kind of thing all the time.
Well, what they can use it for and what they can take to court and present are two different things.
That's very true. That's very true.
If the technology is there, yeah, they can fly over anyone's house and record it and go like, oh, okay, this has got a very high heat signature. Mm-hmm. But then they've got to show, all right, we had probable cause we had probable cause to a judge to say, yeah, we went and got a warrant to look at this person's house. Because even if you've got a big sign in there that, you know, that can only be seen in infrared going, you know, we're growing pot that the cops can read. Unless they can present that in court, them physically having the information isn't going to do them a whole lot of good
right.
to be able to use it against you. And this goes back to even the privacy stuff where, you know, they're intercepting communications and whatnot. The problem isn't so much what they can get, but what they can do with what they get. Because then if they go, all right, well, we've got probable cause because we did a flyby and we saw that these guys had pot. That's not probable cause because that's, you know, justifying it after the fact. If it was on foreign soil, well, they wouldn't need a warrant, but locally, or rather within the U.S., we don't have anything like a FISA court for, at least that I know of, mm-hmm. for being able to get a search warrant after the fact, which means that there has to be some sort of evidence, someone calls in a tip, something that they can take to a judge and get a warrant before they start taking pictures. And if you can show that they had this information from like a flyby and they used that to go get their warrant, you can probably get it tossed out of court. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, otherwise it's like, why not just set up cameras everywhere and, you know, we'll just see who's doing bad things, and we'll get warrants for them after the fact.
Yeah, the warrant has to be, in order for the evidence to be admissible, you know, the FISA stuff aside, they have to have the warrant before they do the search and seizure. Otherwise, the defense attorney can file a motion to suppress, and that evidence would be excluded. But I think that there's a big distinction between them surveilling me on my property or on private property versus them surveilling me in public. And so if they want to record me walking down the street or running through a park, then they can do that, and that would be admissible, warrant or not. But in order for them to surveil me in my house, whether it's from a drone, from the air, from wherever, then they can't do that without a warrant. Now, you also have to remember that if it can be seen from a public place, then, you know, so if I don't have fences around my backyard that's full of marijuana, then I'm in trouble anyways, even though that would be on my property because you can see it from the street. But with that, with that case where they had that house and they needed that, or they used that heat sensing technology, they were standing on public property looking at that house, but because the only way they knew anything was illegal was because of the use of this technology that wasn't available to civilians, that was where they ran into problems. Now, they could have used that to look at a structure that was on, you know, public property, and there wouldn't have been any problem.
It's pretty much basically anything that they can't just see standing there, they need to get a warrant for. You know, so if someone's growing pot in their window, you can see that from the street, so you're fine. But as soon as you have to look through a wall for it onto private property, that's when they need to start justifying, all right, you know, why are we going beyond what we can just see standing on the street?
And that actually brings up a really good point. What the law would be that if they are flying in legal airspace, if they see it, even if it's on my private property and not available from somebody, to somebody standing on the street corner, that would be admissible. There was a case where somebody had, again, and it comes up a lot in drug cases, right? So somebody had a big structure that they were using, again, to grow marijuana, and there were holes in the roof. And from airspace, they were flying over, and they were able to see into that structure and saw that that was what was going on. And they didn't need a warrant for that because they were in public airspace. And so I think that's extremely relevant to drones, because if they're flying where regular aircraft would be able to fly, then whatever they see, even if somebody couldn't observe that from the street corner.
Now, I know Google's run into this a couple of times, but no, obviously not law enforcement, but along those lines, let's say you're sunbathing naked in your backyard and it's walled in and whatnot, and they're doing a legal flyover. Is that considered public indecency?
That's a good question. I don't think that, well, I mean, that would go more towards less about Fourth Amendment searches and everything, but and more about public indecency. But I would think that you would be on your private property, not able to be seen from by the general street public. Level. I think that you would be, I don't think that they're going to fly over people's houses and bust them for sunbathing in their backyards. I don't think that, one, I don't think they would, but even if they tried, I would think that the argument would be, look, I wasn't really in public. You couldn't see me from the street. And you're kind of creepy if you're flying drones over my backyard, you know what I mean? So I think that you would probably be okay. So you can, you know, thumbs up for whatever sunbathing you want to do.
Yeah.
The question is not what they will do, but what they can do.
Right.
Sure.
Right.
I was curious, and you may not be able to answer this, and maybe it's a jurisdictional thing. When I buy a piece of property, how much airspace, how far is airspace above that mile?
Oh,
none.
Yeah, I don't know the answer
none.
To that.
You have no airspace rights at all.
Well, I mean, 20 feet, 30 feet, 100 feet.
Ground level.
Just fly it over anybody's property?
Within reason, yes. FAA has certain lights, has limits as to how far. I mean, they realize folk have got structures and whatnot and that sort of thing, and people like to fly kites and whatnot. So the FAA has certain regulations about how low aircraft can go. So there is leeway there. But as a property owner, you've got no mineral rights for that property unless you specifically buy them, like for mines and whatnot, and you have no airspace rights there. You're granted certain leeway by FFA regulations, but it's not yours. It's simply airspace you can use. But you couldn't restrict anyone from flying over your property, for example.
It would be like nuisance. Yeah, it wouldn't necessarily fall under criminal law, but I would, I could certainly, if somebody was flying drones over my house, I would, you know, I would start looking at suing them for trespass and nuisance and things right. like that. But I think, you know, for in terms of criminal, I think that you're going to have very, very little. You're not going to be able to argue very well that, wow, they were flying way too low. I think it's going to be a tough sell.
But like you said, if you're flying low and it's a noisy thing, you could file for a nuisance, but that's the same as if someone's dragging up and down your road outside with no muffler.
I was thinking in terms of, can I defend myself against a drone? If somebody's flying a drone and spying on me, can I shoot it down?
Well, it depends where you are, because that would more fall under, you know, discharging a firearm within public,
sure.
or within city limits or something along those lines, because unless the drone's actually attacking you.
EMP might work.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But again, how much of your household electronics is shielded against EMP? You know, so yes, you might take them out, but you probably take out your TV, your fridge, your cell phones, your car, your neighbor. I don't think you can. I'd say, well, theoretically, yes, it would, because there's no real way to trace it, and you're not really. It's not a projectile weapon, and it's really hard to prove that you detonated an EMP device. Yeah, you can get it with a garden hose, you know. But again, if they've got a camera and they show you, you know, you're deliberately trying to blow their thing out of the air, they can, you know, there's property damage on their side that they can, you know, file against you. You know, unless you can show that, you know, they're spying on your teenage daughter or something along those lines, in which case then it goes back to right now, you're going back and forth because, you know, they're suing you for property damage for blowing up their mm-hmm. drone, and you're suing them for trespassing and, you know, peeping Tom and that sort of thing.
Privacy and things like that. But yeah, now this is all civil, this is all stuff that's, you know, cops aren't going to come and help you stop somebody necessarily from flying drones in the vicinity of your house.
Right.
I mean, I guess as a practical matter, you could say, hey, look, I'm kind of being harassed here, and the cops may go talk to someone, but you're not going to, I would struggle to find some sort of a law that the cops would go to someone's house and go, okay, here's, you know, Georgia code 25-4 or whatever, and you have violated that by flying this drone over so-and-so's house. I'm struggling to think of ways that might happen. I think that's just going to be viewed more as two neighbors having a dispute, and you gotta duke it out in court, just the two of you.
Right. Yeah, your hand was up first. Sorry, one behind you.
I think that what's going to happen first is you're going to see protections for police to use drones for law enforcement, and limiting civilians from it is going to be slow. And I would think that it would take some sort of an incident, something in the news to kind of get somebody to do anything. But I don't really anticipate them passing some. I don't see situations arising where they would go, oh, okay, well, this is the anti-drone legislation of 2014. I don't see anything like that. And definitely I would see expanded use before I would see them limiting use.
Well, I would actually see them using legislation to okay cops using it,
yeah.
and then case law to stop civilians from using
it. I'll agree.
Yeah, if you guys want to ask questions, just come stand over here. It's easier than us passing the microphone around at 10:30 a.m. on Monday morning.
Okay. Is there any requirement that...
Is this thing on?
Yeah, it's on.
Is there any requirement that law enforcement identify their drone in any way? to keep you from maybe shooting down somebody else's drone or anything like that?
No, because you're not supposed to be shooting at any drones at all. Now, you'll get into more trouble shooting down the police one because it's almost definitely got cameras on it.
Yeah.
But no, there should be no real difference between shooting down your neighbor's drone or the police drone, other than you're going to get a whole lot more trouble with the police one, simply because it's, you know, it's they have more power to make life difficult for you.
Yeah.
But legally, I think it's probably at the same standing at this point.
Yeah, and I think you're probably going to be more in trouble for discharging a firearm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Than.
Well, I was thinking about the neighbor whose kid got a drone for Christmas, and he's out flying it everywhere, including over your property, or something like that.
Actually, I was thinking if you really want to take one of them down, you're probably better off using something like just fishing line. Seriously, or even tinsel. You know, those like long strands of tinsel.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get something like that over it, because those propellers will suck it in and get it all twisted up, and it'll crash from that. And I mean, who the hell's going to sue you for shooting tinsel?
Okay. We're celebrating. Hi. Well, I'm a bit scared as a European citizen as to see what you know going on here. But my question is, I think we're talking about 1.0 drones. The artificial intelligence that you actually put into a drone. We're talking about drones that have like intention because there's someone using them, kid or whoever. But then you have drones that actually can behave, independently.
Mm-hmm.
And
kind of like a Roomba just flying over.
Right. Yeah, like a Roomba flying over the air. And I wonder, what do you think about those type of drones that will eventually, come as a reality, even a commodity for us to buy? Because those, I don't know if the same, legislation applies.
Well, right now you should be able to get those drones as it is now. Granted, they won't be terribly autonomous, but like you're saying with the Roomba, with the GPS, since we're able to use the military satellites for accuracy on the GPS side, it really shouldn't be very hard to drop a computer onto one of those things to fly like a search pattern for you. Where you can just like launch it, let it fly a search pattern, say a square mile or something, and it via GPS tracks lanes and everything else, and then have it just go land somewhere for you to go pick up later. That should be entirely possible at this point.
That's commercially available. It has been for a while.
Right. So there's a difference between commercially available and retail available.
Oh, it's retail available.
Right.
Farmers.
Yeah. That's a.
But that would be like 1.5 version of the drone. 2.0 is actually not deterministic.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, it reacts to the environment in ways that you might not predict.
Honestly, I think that is just a question of technology, and I do see that happening. Because especially for someone who's doing what they're not supposed to be doing, like someone who's war driving. They want to be able to see if my cameras detect, say, a police car, because they've usually got a particular profile, that as soon as it sees that, it can then make itself scarce. Or if it detects, I don't know how much the equipment weighs now, but if it's doing something like a radar search and it sees I've got another aircraft in the area, I can vanish. I think that's more a function of what technology is available than if it's going to happen. I firmly believe it absolutely will happen. And I suspect the hobbyists will get to it before the commercial side folk do, especially at the retail and commercial level. Because, I mean, we've already got that at the military level just because they've got more money and things than they know what to do with. But the guys who are playing around with it at, especially with like with the SBCs, you can get like the Beagle Boards or the, what's the new one called? It's not a BlackBerry. But yeah, the little miniature computers you can put onto those things. That is so going to be a hobbyist thing to do. And the more hobbyists get into it, the more accurate, the more sophisticated those AI routines are going to be. What I do like about the AI side is that it is just software. It's simply a case of how much space do you need to be able to store the software, and then how much weight do you need for the hardware to be able to process that in a reasonable fashion. But again, with Moore's law of everything becoming twice as fast every 2 years for half the price, if it's not available now at some level, within the next decade, it absolutely will be, because we'll simply have the technology to be able to do that. And you're going to have some backyard hacker who will put that into a system that it can spot cops, it can spot likely things. They'll most likely have things like FLIRs in their systems to be able to detect, you know, which cars have recently been used, that sort of thing. And it wouldn't surprise me at all to find, like, you know, a smart teenager, like, profiling the neighborhood, you know, seeing who's been out driving recently, that, you know, you can pick up patterns of behavior for people, especially if he's bored and he decides he wants to go break in, because that's a fantastic way to profile your neighbors and see what their schedules are. You know, see who's got a hot car. All right, we get home about 8 o'clock at night, engine's still warm, and this is a regular thing. So, you know, before 8 o'clock, that house is probably empty. And then all of that, you can program in on the AI side to keep going back to create those profiles for you. So, you know, you can have it come back to a docking station, recharge itself, go out the next night, fly another path, and come back again. And then it'll go out and say, all right, these are your likely targets based on what I found, based on the algorithms you've given me. That, I honestly think that that's just a question of time.
And one of the challenges would be limiting the use or the availability of drones for nefarious purposes versus making sure that, as you were mentioning, farmers are able to use this to monitor their lands for completely not only legal but very beneficial reasons. And I mean, again, it's just like with any technology, I think it's gonna be, you're gonna get mixed up, the laws are gonna get mixed up. They're gonna capture and prohibit some stuff that we would normally want people to be able to do and not quite be able to stop people from doing some other things.
Especially in the bigger farms, that the AI stuff would be useful for going hunting poachers, for example, who are out in like the mega farms out in like Wyoming and Texas and whatnot. You know, just have your drone fly circuits, like guard patrol. And every time they detect a infrared signature that doesn't look like, you know, a cow or a horse or something, it just shoots your radio message saying, hey, you know, these are the coordinates that I saw that, and it looks like there's somewhere wandering around your land.
It'd be a good way for rangers to monitor the large national parks and things like that.
Fires and stuff.
Yeah, that would just come to mind because of the fire out in California now. The sooner they catch it. But how do you permit people to be able to have them for those purposes, but, you know, stop the teenage kid from being able to figure out exactly the best target in their neighborhood to break in.
Right.
Well, since we're talking about this becoming sort of a hobby, spying on people, I am sure many of you have also gotten one of those red light camera tickets. And basically, the city I live in several cities around the area, they have a contract with a private camera company to set up the cameras, take your picture, have a cop watch it, sign it, and go give us cash.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, is that even really legal? And second, if it is, then what's the difference between me going into your house, taking pictures of your growth room, and handing it to a cop, having him sign it, and coming over and arresting you?
Well, I think the difference between the cameras on the streets is that the streets are public, and I could, as a person, stand on the street corner and write down the license plate numbers of the people that run the red lights, and so I think that's how they get by with that. And I would think, even though I don't know the details of those contracts, I'm pretty sure that would be a situation where the cops would be doing what they're allowed to do, and they're just contracting this company out to provide the cameras, just like they would, you know, pay Dell for their computers or whatever, or pay someone, a mechanic, to maintain their police cruisers. And then the difference, the other situation was taking a look at your neighbor's house. That would be their private area, and actually, the Fourth Amendment wouldn't protect somebody. The Fourth Amendment protects citizens from government action and the police doing illegal searches and seizures. If I am on, you know, in your house and I happen to see that you've got, you know, a million dead bodies, I can call the cops, right? Now, I may be in trouble for burglary or whatever for why I was in your house, but, you know, the cops would certainly, you know, as long as I'm not doing that, at the direction of the police, then I wouldn't be a state actor, and the Fourth Amendment wouldn't prohibit them from using that.
And actually, if you're in their house by invitation, like you know them,
yeah,
then it becomes completely and utterly legal. Yeah. You know, depending on what you're telling them, you know, you may lose a friend, but the cops will be like, yeah, this is perfect, because it becomes an informed tip then. Mm-hmm. It's like, yep, I was in the house, I saw this over here, and the cops go, fantastic, we'll be there in 10 minutes with a warrant.
Right, yeah. Whether you were there illegally would be like a separate issue.
So they can get a warrant based on just whatever I tell them? I think she has drawn a series of pictures of her house.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, no. If you're standing outside and going, I think they've got drugs because they're having visitors at weird hours, the cops may set up a surveillance thing. But if you've actually been inside the house and say, yeah, I saw the drugs, here's a picture, that's a whole different thing from you standing outside going, well, I don't like these people, they look kind of suspicious. Because, yeah, you get idiot neighbors who tell on each other all the time, trying to get each other in trouble. And especially if you establish a pattern of that, you're more likely to get police attention than they will, just because they're like, look, stop being a dick, you're wasting our time. There's nothing going on here. And we're going to make life difficult for you because you're just literally wasting your time. It's like calling 911 unnecessarily. But if you've actually got pictures from inside the house that says, I was over for a party, I got invited, you know, everyone's doing drugs, you know, we had like party bowls of pills and everything else, cops be like, you know, we'll be there with a warrant because we've now got an unsolicited informed tip that we now have probable cause.
Yeah, and if you're just saying, I think that my neighbors are doing X, Y, or Z because I see people coming and going, that would not necessarily rise to the level of probable cause, but it would certainly, I think, like you were mentioning, lead police to start surveillance, and then from there they wind up with the rest of the picture to get the probable cause to do the warrants or arrests or whatever.
Quick aside, FLIR units, just checked on Amazon, they're about $2,000 that would pick up heat signature. Just to tie together some panels, and I guess really for Christina here, I don't know if anybody was at the filming disasters panel yesterday, but they had an incident where they wanted a drone camera viewpoint. They employed a company whose expertise was actually search and rescue and didn't know how to do this sort of thing very well. They wanted a sort of up and over shot into a window on a duplex from which the hero in the next scene was going to crash through. They told the company, go to the left side of the duplex. Of course, that's ambiguous depending on which side you're looking at.
Sure.
Family was potty training their toddler and looked up to see a big professional quality camera pointing right in their window. Police came. Lots of red faces, nobody arrested. But right. That, I don't know, how would that play out if the police really wanted to press?
I'm sorry, what was the specific details of your question? I'm sorry, I mean, I understand that the camera wound up around the wrong side of the
yeah,
building.
Yeah, so it was inadvertently looking in the wrong window. Right. So if the family really wanted to press charges and the police were not happy about it, it's inadvertent, but it's peeping Tom. How does that play out?
I think that would be, you know, intent. Nobody's intending. It would be a mistake. Any law, any criminal violation, right, the state has to prove that the person knew that what they were doing was illegal and intended to do that. And in that case, it was sort of no one was intending to spy on anyone. That was, you know, an honest, you know, mistake. So I think that would be how that would resolve. However, as we were just mentioning, if they happen to spin around that building and see somebody, you know, doing something illegal, and then that would certainly be something they could turn over to the police.
So if they were violating body training law, then
right. Right. So I heard the cops are really cracking down on that.
So how many of you are, okay, go ahead.
I just wanted your opinion, actually, about something. One of my concerns about the use of drones is not so much the kind of conspiracy issue that someone's going to spy on me, but the use of them in law enforcement for revenue generation. The same reason they use traffic light cameras. I mean, it seems like a relatively straightforward thing once you develop the technology to have them fly up and down the freeway to monitor traffic speeds and then issue people. And then in the same way that they mail you a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah,
but,
I mean, was going to say
that's a person. that's a lot of money to put an aircraft up there.
Right.
You make it cheap, all of a sudden it makes a real revenue generation process. I mean, it, where I live in Chattanooga, about a year ago, the legislature was passing laws to prevent the use of red light cameras because it's shown they were unsafe. But they allowed for, if you already had a contract with someone, then they weren't going to prohibit you from doing that. Before the law went into effect, they signed a 25-year contract with the company that was doing it because the city was seeing such a substantial amount of revenue associated with it. That concerns me, I mean, because that is kind of a clear motivation. That's an easy to understand motivation and a great deal of temptation for a municipality to say, man, that's, if somebody can come and improve that they can generate money, you invest this kind with our company and we'll generate this kind of revenue.
I live in Virginia, they've been using aircraft for speed detection for 40 years.
I mean, you can fly along lots of places, and it says aircraft being used to monitor speed.
Right.
But
it seems
again,
like it
the cost of that
more
is
likely.
Substantial to put an aircraft in the air and pay the guy to fly it and all that other stuff.
Right.
The science chief. I was wondering what your opinion is on that.
I think that cost will be affected there as well, because the cameras they use are really, really high-end cameras for those things. You know, they're not using a point-and-shoot off the shelf, which makes your drone a whole lot bigger. And with your drone being a whole lot bigger, they want someone to monitor it, you know, because they don't want a free gust of wind blowing this thing all over because, you know, something went wrong and we didn't detect that we were flying into a storm. So if I don't see any reason they wouldn't use it on a technical level, because you could have one person monitoring two or three different stations at that point. And that's cheaper than them putting one or two people in an aircraft every day. But it's still going to have at least a very high entry point because you're going to be using big drones with expensive equipment, and you still have to pay someone to watch the equipment. Long term, it probably would pay off, just because, you know, over time, it becomes cheaper to use the things. But I still think that simply putting a camera up in a box will be much cheaper. But then again, it becomes a cost-benefit question of how useful is it for us to have a mobile camera versus a fixed camera? And if it's in a situation where it's very rural or something along those lines, the mobility may be worth doing. But I think in a metro area, we shouldn't worry about it too much, at least from traffic control, just because it is cheaper to put up a standard camera and monitor a certain intersection than it is to invest in the tech necessary to make a drone safe that, you know, you don't send up and it's crashing every second mission because it can't handle high winds, or the camera resolution isn't good enough, or something along those lines.
I'm wondering whether or not this is one of the justifications that law enforcement gives whenever they want to implement some sort of a drone system, is that for search and rescue, for high risk tactical missions. And so I could imagine a scenario where they purchase one of these for those reasons, and they're like, well, now I've got this really expensive equipment sitting there, and I got to find some way to cover that cost or to monetize that to justify that. And so I would see a temptation there once they have it to go, all right, well, man, I need to put this into use somehow. Otherwise, it's just because how often, hopefully we don't have many situations, you know, in a year where we need to go do search and rescue with drones, or some really hostage situation where we need to use a drone to go see what's going on. So I could see a temptation where once they buy it, they want to cash in on it a little bit. But I think that, you know, practically, it's going to be a while before they're risking expensive equipment.
Right. Yeah, because drones are fun, but especially at the retail level, you need very, very good conditions to fly them safely. And by safely, I mean something where you're not going to be losing your investment. Like I was mentioning, the $600 copter that I was looking at is really an indoor copter, or a really nice outdoor conditions copter, but you couldn't do it like in the weather we had this weekend. It wouldn't work. The camera would be fine, but the drone itself would probably short out from all the rain and that sort of thing. So,
commit crimes on a rainy day.
Right. commit crimes on rainy days. So if I wanted to spend a few thousand, I could probably get a better one. But now I start running into the problem of, if I'm doing this as a hobby, is it really worth me spending $8,000-$10,000 for a copter like that and to maintain it? And at what point do the cops start asking me questions like, all right, this is now clearly no longer a little hobbyist thing. You've now got serious hardware here. What are you using it for? Now, it could be completely innocuous, but I don't really want to have to justify myself to cops before the fact.
Excuse me. Has anyone done any studies on the cost effectiveness of manned flight helicopters versus drone units in urban areas?
Not offhand that I know of. Doesn't mean someone hasn't. Any police department that's buying a drone has done one.
I mean, the problem with helicopters or airplanes are almost worthless in the metro area.
Right.
Helicopters are million-dollar pieces of machinery
right.
that are hundreds of dollars per hour to fly. Obviously, a drone could be cheaper. Could be.
Right.
I mean, like a Firebee is not cheaper right now because it is a helicopter. But when you're deploying these drones, you need to show cost effectiveness, cost recovery, to get them back. A little small drone that you might use in a rescue situation for a day or two in total flight time, not necessarily a day or two in real time, is significantly cheaper than a helicopter
yes.
because you can put it in a closet.
Yeah.
So where you find this, is, and I like the idea of people out there saying, well, maybe we'll use it for traffic control, but it gets to be operational costs. So I was kind of curious if anyone had done studies on that.
Not that I know of, but the operation costs would definitely be lower, if only because most of those things would be electric versus gas-powered.
But that's short flight duration, then.
It is short flight duration, but on the bigger copters, because you'd be using the bigger ones simply because you don't want them blowing all over the place. You know, the heavier it is, the more stable it is.
And the more fuel you have to carry down.
But if you're carrying batteries, you can make up a lot of that cost. Because the internal combustion ones would be relatively expensive, I think, to maintain over the electric ones. And then you've also got an issue of covertness. Because the cops really don't want something that's going na 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 all over the neighborhood. You know, they want a nice quiet thing that no one's really going to pay attention to, especially at night. You know, all you hear is like, no one really pays attention to whispering at night. Whereas if you've got something that's like rattling the windows because it's got an internal combustion engine, we're like, yeah, we can't use that because...
A lot of the noise in helicopters isn't the engine, it's the blades.
right. No, you're right about that. But an electric engine running the blades, all you got to worry about is the blade noise. Versus this, the actual engine itself going. And like you said, the helicopter, you've got a much, it's making a lot more noise than the little quadcopters will make yeah. as far as that goes.
But then it's 50 times bigger, too.
Exactly. And again, it's a lot more stable. So a lot of it comes down to what will you be using this for as to how big a copter do we need. And then once you bring that in, I'm pretty sure the cops have done studies like that because they'll be like, all right, we need a small one for this, we need a much bigger one for that type of thing. And they will have done those assessments, but I don't know that anyone's done one commercially. It probably wouldn't be too difficult to do. Someone really just has to get the inclination to go sit down and do it.
I think there's also safety and life costs. There was a helicopter crash here in Atlanta, was it? Last year, it was a police helicopter, and there were officers that died in that crash.
I think there's two that died, didn't
there? Yeah. And so, from officer safety, they may want to use drones to keep from having to put officers up in the air like that. But then, civilian safety, they may want something with somebody in there flying it. So I think that I think that would weigh into the costs too, right? You know, how much is it going to cost them?
And I do think long term it would be cheaper, simply because you need fewer mechanics to operate on a drone than you do in a full size copter. I mean, full size, you know, one person could maintain a small fleet of drones much easier than one person could maintain a small fleet of helicopters. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just for routine maintenance, having to strip them down every once in a while, that sort of thing.
During World War II, when the Allies had cracked the Enigma codes, they would always, when they were using the intelligence they got out of it, fly a plane over the U-boat or whatever and create this credible story as to how they got the information when they really got it by cracking the codes. With the drones, our government could be going out there, getting this information with various remote sensing devices, and then calling local law enforcement, say, we think you ought to set up a sobriety checkpoint here, and I'd probably have a dope-sniffing dog or something like that. And then all of a sudden, very non-randomly, they're catching a lot of people and things that they really wouldn't have if they'd been operating consistent with the Fourth Amendment. How do we do surveillance on our government to make sure that they don't do this sort of illegal behavior?
What term used?
And what could you do to the officers who engage in that sort of thing knowingly?
I think that that's going to fall on, unfortunately, the defense attorneys. And this situation comes up with the NSA as well. What they've found out is happening is that the NSA is gathering this data, and then when they find that domestic incidents are happening, like drug trafficking or whatever, they're handing that information off to, or tips off to, local law enforcement, and they're usually pretty vague. They're something like, you're going to want to be at this location at this time, or you're going to see a car that looks like this, find a reason to pull it over. And then once the bust happens or the arrest happens, the fact that the police were initially tipped off to that incident by the NSA is not in any of these records, and the NSA has been telling the DEA and other law enforcement agencies, what you need to do is you need to go back and you need to find another reason to have stopped that car, been at that location, or taken whatever investigative step that they took. And they call that parallel construction, and so they're building that probable cause and they're building their case through any other means other than the NSA, and I would imagine that happens more than we know, and the only way that really gets brought out is we get lucky and it gets disclosed that they're doing that, or defense attorneys are pushing. When you have prosecutions, defense attorneys are trying to do their best to poke holes in the police story and get to, no, really, where did you get that information? How did you know? Are you really, you just happened to magically appear at this time and know to pull this car over? And it has to be, I think that's going to be the best way for that to get uncovered, because the cops, law enforcement isn't going to, they're not going to help with that.
And unfortunately, there's no way to proactively do that, because a lot of the information is secret. Even when it's not NSA stuff, just the domestic folks, it is secret. And if they come up with the plausible reasons to be there, it's really hard to poke a hole in that, because it's a perfectly valid reason. Like, if you know that someone's going to be holding up the candy store next to the donut shop, you know, it's like, well, we're cops, they're donuts.
Wow. I think did the battery on that die? I think that was
I heard that outside.
Yeah, battery died.
Yeah.
Okay. Give me a sec.
Yeah.
Hang on. Bring a bowl. Bring a bowl on the
floor.
Well, we're recording, so.
Oh, okay.
Edit that part out.
Yeah, please.
We're on full, Mike.
You'll fix it in post.
Hold on, yeah.
I think he said it's four.
All right, the thing that is sort of upsetting me is that it almost sounds like Big Brother is legal as long as a private corporation is the middleman. And is that the case or not?
No, I'm not sure that's really the case, because the middleman has to... The private corporations actually have less power than the government does by a significant margin. Where the middleman usually comes in is being able to provide services to the government for cheaper than the government could buy them themselves. So it's really a question of the... the commercial side being enablers more than anything else. Because, like you mentioned, the search and rescue that was doing the movie, and they had the search and rescue company, that's a perfectly legitimate use, because, you know, search and rescue's got the equipment. We don't want to spend tens of thousands of dollars buying the equipment for like one use. When the cops buy things, they're usually buying it because it's not commercially available, or because it's cheaper for them to contract based on how much they want to be using it. So if they're doing like Dell or, you know, Dell computers or whatever, it's because it's cheaper for them to lease the computers with the technicians. It's for them to actually buy the equipment and have their own technicians looking after it. So if anything, private industry is really enabling that. For example, Bose Allen Hamilton, the folk that Edward Snowden worked for, they've gotten literally billions of contracts. I think I saw one thing where one contract was worth $1.1 billion. So it's huge business for them, and it's cheaper for them to provide the work than it is for the government to actually farm it out themselves, or at least that's the argument. And there's really no reason that a lot of these companies should not be doing such services and renting them out to whoever's willing to pay for them, including the government. Your biggest problem there is when the government starts handing out immunities for things, like they did with Verizon, with those agencies who are, or those companies who are doing things like that, and then being protected. I mean, I understand why they're doing it, because it makes the companies a whole lot more willing to do it for a good price. But I think that's really just a function of business more than anything else at this point.
I think that's, yeah, I agree with everything that you said. And the one thing that I would, just more from some a legal perspective, if a private company does something at the direction of the police, then in that situation, that third party can't do anything that the police couldn't do. However, if a private entity, person, corporation, or whatever is just acting on their own and doing their own thing, not at police direction, then they can do whatever they can do. They're not limited the same way by the Fourth Amendment that the police are. So it seems like it's a fine distinction, but it's the difference between me as a person happening to discover that a crime has happened versus me as a police informant going out and trying to uncover crimes without the limitations that the police would normally have. So yes, private actors have more freedom, but you know, if they're not. Kind of oh, well, in those cases, they would be acting at the, yeah, absolutely. So if I have no contact with the police, I have no contracts with the government, with law enforcement, I have no agreements or anything, and I never talk to them, and I happen to walk into someone's house and find X, Y, and Z, I'm my own person. But if I am someone who's in trouble with the police, and they've said, hey, look, I know we think Bob is doing something, and I know you know Bob, so go see what you can find out, and we'll see what we can do on your case. Then I'm acting as a state actor, and I'm limited by the Fourth Amendment and all of that stuff. But if I just all on my own go and hang out in Bob's house and find out what I can find out, then I'm just me. Does that make sense a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
If the government is paying a corporation, mm-hmm.
Right.
Paying this other company billions of dollars. So
right, and they would be.
And you were just saying, like, the cops magically know to show up here. Mm-hmm. So it seems to me like, oh, well, Big Brother is legal as long as Uncle Sam doesn't own the camera, is what it sounds like to me.
It's a compensation thing. In her case, with the person, they're not getting paid money,
right.
But
right.
They're getting paid with a deal.
A deal, yeah.
So you they're still receiving compensation, just not money.
Yeah.
And if they're doing domestic surveillance, they'd still be limited by the same laws the police are, because they're just non-police people. They're then handing over that information.
I know it is a little bit complicated, and I think that if maybe later, if you have some specific scenarios, I think that we could hash those out, because it can get a little bit tricky.
Okay. Go ahead.
Are
with
you
the
sure?
Last one.
I'm going on more what you guys. You got to say what I was going to say eventually.
Okay.
Okay. Anyone got a last question? Because we're right
yeah.
at 11 now. All right. Any closing remarks?
Nope, I don't think so.
All right, well, guys, thank you for coming out then. It's awful early on a Monday morning for DragonCon, but thank you.
Thank you.